You're back.
For good.
So good to see you, Lauren.
Good to see you every day.
Ah, it's like a vision when I came in. And some new faces tonight. From the Wednesday group. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Dan.
Beth.
Jay.
Britt.
Lauren.
Randy.
Julian.
Abijah.
Angie. A little different from the Wednesday group up to now. Uh-huh. Not a big surprise, Ben.
Yeah, because it's been 20 years.
Ah, well. Well, we are reading short talks that were given by one of the famous Zen teachers, Dogen Zenji. And we pass it around and read it, paragraph by paragraph, taking turns, and then discuss it a little bit when we're done. And we're on page 39, I do believe, on the 12th one.
In an evening talk, he said, at the present time, people of this country, whether in respect to speech or in respect to behavior, mostly think of good and bad, right and wrong, in terms of the seeing, hearing, consciousness, and knowledge of worldly people. If I do that, others will think it bad. If I do this, others will think it good. In this way they cling, even into the future.
This is totally wrong. People of the world cannot necessarily be considered good. However people think, let them think so, let them even call you a madman. In your own mind, do that which you would accord with the way of Buddha, and refrain from doing that which does not conform to the Buddha's teaching. If you pass your whole life in this way, it is no consequence how people of the world may think.
To, quote, flee the world means that one does not let the feeling of worldly people hang on his mind. If you just study the actions of the Buddhas and patriarchs, learn the compassion of the Bodhisattvas, repent in the hidden presence of all heavenly beings and benevolent spirits, and go on the way by acting in deference to the regulations of the Buddha, you shall have no trouble at all.
It is also wrong to be shameless before other people, to indulge in doing what is bad on grounds that it doesn't matter if people say or think it is bad. You shouldn't just act in total reliance upon Buddhist teaching without depending upon the views of other people. In the Buddhist teaching, too, such indulgence and shamelessness is forbidden.
Well, that's the end of it, isn't it? I think it would be well to go on and read the next one. It's just two paragraphs. And it's the same thing, really, or another piece of the same thing.
He also said, even in the matters of the mundane world, even if you are in a dark room or in a place where others cannot see you, even when changing clothes and sitting and lying down as well, to carelessly fail to conceal the private parts, lacking a sense of propriety, is censured as shamelessness before celestial beings and demons. Just conceal those places which are to be concealed, just the same as when others conceal, and be ashamed of that which is shameful.
In the Buddhist teaching also, the prohibitions and precepts are also like this. Therefore, one on the way does not speak of inside or outside, does not choose between light or darkness. Mindful in his heart of the Buddha's regulations, one should not do what is bad just because no one will see or know.
So these are all about right action and how we act in the world. Our self-consciousness comes because it's not that we're thinking about ourself as ourself, it's that we're thinking about how we're appearing in the world. What is our image? How do we present ourselves? And it's easy to qualify our attitude toward others by what we think they think of us. We spend a lot of time doing that dance sometimes, often finding to our surprise that they don't think what we think they think at all. It's a complete surprise. Oh, it's not that way. And he's talking to young monks who are just beginning to study the way in all of these talks. And so he's making sure that they're modest and that they don't, because the Dharma frees you, think that, oh, anything goes, and that they, one of the most important teachings that are given, and when I first heard it from Koban, I didn't believe it. He said, if people think bad things about you, even if everybody in the world is down on you, if you know you're right, you just hold on to your own understanding. And I had this vision of everybody coming down, you know, you're wrong. But of course, it hardly ever happens that way for us. But it's about integrity, holding our integrity, and of course being flexible enough to change if we need to change, but not changing just because the world tells us that we need to. And the way of the Buddhas is based on the teaching of the precepts, that if we know what's right, then we hold to that, whatever people say. And then he says that we don't do what is bad just because no one will see or know. So he turns the thing around and says, you know, we don't be bad just because we think we can get away with it, or we can show off in the world, or nobody's going to care. But also that we're not bad in secret. That how we keep our integrity is we keep it even in the darkness. Even in complete isolation when nobody knows where we are or who we are. We all have a public life and a private life. We have a public persona and a private persona. And we have different personas for different groups of people, too, often. With our baseball team, we have one way of being, and with our Dharma sisters and brothers, maybe it's a little bit different. The context is different. But there is a kind of essence of us, or a one-piecedness of us beyond all of those things. And if we keep faith with that and trust that, you could say the real me, the one that wants to live a good life. Integrity means integrated. So it's about bringing all the pieces together and functioning from all sides, both sides of the brain, you could say, and all sides of all the aspects of our personality. It's the basis of our training, really, or our Zazen practice. As we sit with the different aspects of our life, all those different faces that we find of us, conditioned, unconditioned, all appear in our sitting. And as we become more and more familiar with ourselves, we become more integrated and more easily at ease in the world with others, more comfortable, less self-conscious, and more just oneself. Sometimes people ask me about change, you know, how are we going to be transformed and changed? But I always think that it's more like we get cooked down like a sauce. It just gets more and more condensed and more rich and tasty. We become more and more ourselves that way. We don't transcend. We don't get more special. As I always quote Coben, he said, it's always a coming down. It's getting more simple and more modest and more plain. I like to think of those young monks standing in front of Dogen, listening to these talks, and what it must have been like for them. Young men out in the wilderness, freezing cold probably, trying to hear about a sense of propriety, a sense of Buddha's way, trying to learn some thing that feels so new and yet is really the oldest thing. Someone just wrote to me today about the precepts. She said, my husband thinks the precepts are just like the Ten Commandments, and it's just all balderdash. I thought, well, it sounds like that. But the truth is the precepts are what we are. It's our best self. On one side, it's our best self. And on the other side, it's sort of hopeless guidelines because it's impossible to keep them. So unlike the Ten Commandments, where one is expected to keep them, with the ten precepts, or the five, no one really expects to keep them perfectly. There's no way. When we vow not to kill, it's with full knowledge that everything we do is destructive. And yet there is in us a deep wish not to kill. And so what the precepts do is remind us moment by moment of what we're doing. When we sit down to a meal, if we've taken the precepts, we can't eat a meal without realizing where that food came from and what it means. They give everything that we do a deep meaning. And it's our connection with all things that gets expressed. Oh, this is how we are. It took me a long time to learn that it was okay to have people mad at me. But when we got up to Chikoji and started creating that place, suddenly there were an awful lot of people who were mad at us. There were people in the Sangha who thought we shouldn't do it in the first place. There were people who were already living up there who didn't want us up there and thought that only God owned the land and anybody else could come and just live on it. Then the county got annoyed with us because we were asking for more than they thought we ought to have. And suddenly it just seemed like so many things were all sort of frowning at us from every direction. And yet because we really, really wanted this place to flourish and thrive, it didn't matter. It was so interesting. For the sake of the project, all those frowns were just something to work with. The angry neighbor who hated the sound of the han in the early morning. That's something you can work with. The bureaucrats in the county that wouldn't give us a use permit. We learned how to deal with that, how to deal with the bureaucrats. It was fascinating. So there's a way. A way to be with our own integrity without doing a meltdown because everybody's mad at us. So are there any questions? There's lots of time for discussion, I think. Lauren?
Angie, there's a fairly clear transition there where in the first few sentences he's saying it doesn't matter what other people think. If you're right, stick to it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he says, but it does matter what other people think.
That's right.
And can you do something to smooth out that transition for me a little bit? Because usually, Duncan doesn't when he seems to contradict himself, he's not. When you look at it more carefully, usually.
Well, it's essential to find one's integrity and maintain it, no matter what, even if it means, offering your life to someone else, you just do it. But on the other hand, if you're living all together and you're living with yourself, that's what the second section is about, how you can live with yourself without abusing your dignity and your self-respect. So that's a very important element. That if you refine yourself in your life, then you live with that kind of dignity and integrity. That's how you develop it. Does that connect it better? Yeah. Dan?
I'm thinking about what you said and Dogen said about projecting persona to other people, but what about projecting persona of ourselves to us? And I often think that I can see wanting myself to be something other than who I know I am.
Yeah.
And I've lived long enough for myself to be aware of what's beneath as well as what I'm projecting. And, or actually I should say self-projecting. And I'm kind of wondering if that's what Dogen was studying when he said, what Dogen was saying when he said to study the self. It's kind of like studying the self, that persona relative to who you are beneath.
Yeah, that's the backward step he talks about. In meditation, you take a backward step and turn to see what everything that's there, not just who we think we are as we're waltzing through our life. Yeah. That's why it's so intense to sit, especially long sittings, because you can't fool yourself anymore. No. And it's wonderful in a way, but it's also something of a shock. You know, there's more here than we want to notice sometimes. Because everything comes up, the dark and the light, the good stuff and the bad stuff. It's a great relief in the end. You know, once we can embrace the whole thing, then we don't have to suffer so much trying to be perfect, because we see our perfection is the mess we're in. Abhijit?
Hi.
Hi.
We had just got down Sunday with Rahatsu. She's in Abhijakoja with Peter. It was a beautiful time up there. And Peter's really big, and his emphasis is on just sitting, so the Antaiji style. So, which was beautiful and it was great. And so a big thing that came up for me was no gaining idea, which is the foundation of our zazen, in a sense, or this way that we talk about approaching our zazen. And then, you know, the no gaining idea is really interesting. It seems to be very much in every aspect of our Zen practice, from the mundane to the ultimate. So in this, in line with the precepts, it was coming to me with no gaining idea that it wasn't so much that the movement towards gaining was the problem with approaching the practice, but it was the idea of what the gain is moving towards. So I felt like I couldn't not have a gaining idea when I came to sit down to the cushion, meaning that I came to realize that that the earnestness and the desire and the intention, just the essence of it at its root, was pure and good, and it's what moved me in my practice. And anything extra on top of that was the idea attached to it.
Yeah.
And that was what that was what turned this pure Zen, or this pure Dharma, into delusion. Which is kind of like how I feel with the precepts, is they're also this pure intention, or this pure earnestness towards practice. And because I get caught up in the duality, non-duality, doesn't matter, doesn't matter. You know, and I had gotten caught up in that a lot, and I'm falling back more on in my practice now, just earnestness, just in a sense, to surrender to pure faith in my practice. And that would include the precepts, or sitting zazen, or what my whole life, in a sense, just approaching it with earnestness for truth, and not holding on to what it should look like.
Yeah, exactly. Congratulations. It's wonderful. The Antaiji style is doing nothing but sitting. Is that right? There were no... And walking.
Sitting.
You did 40-minute sit, 10-minute walk. all day into the night
yeah.
for 7 days. I've never done that. We always have a little service, and we have a break, and we have... Did you have breaks at all?
Just for eating.
Just for eating, yeah.
And it was... we did the traditional Orioki and the Zendo.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't done that Jukoji for a while.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So it was really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, Zen style is you sit and you eat and you sleep all in the same place. So the food is brought into the Zendo and you have your own bowls, 1, 2, 3, and you eat from the bowls and then the water comes and pour it in and you wash your bowls. And then some of the water gets sent out with the servers, but some of it you drink. And then you wrap up your bowls and you put them behind you and you've got it all ready for the next meal. It's a very, very brilliant way of feeding many people without hardly any trouble at all. And it's a wonderful practice because everything you do is right in that one place. You put your head down where you've been sitting all day, so the whole thing is still going. It's quite amazing.
As you were talking about working in Jikoji and all these grounds and just knowing what to work with, I'm wondering about Samantha Bhadra and thinking about last week when you were talking about one of the hardest things is just to go into the world and do that. I have a blank about Samantha Bhadra. I have ideas, but where is Avalokiteshvara and Manjushri? I don't know. I have more a more integrated feeling about them, understanding. But Samantha Bhadra, what can you tell us about Samantha?
Well, he, I don't know about the gender, rides an elephant. And is called the Shining Practice Bodhisattva. And it's the Shining Practice going out from the Zendo, from the sitting place, into the world. And practicing in the world. So, meaning, you know, if you're a fisherman, then you practice as a fisherman. If you practice as a whatever, you know, housewife. Tram conductor, anything can be practiced. And for a formal training, you go to the monastery or you go to Berry or Spirit Rock or someplace and you confine your life and you make your whole life just meditation and study, sometimes for years, sometimes for months at a time. Going to Tassajara for a practice period. But eventually you have to come out. And the wisdom of Manjushri, that bodhisattva, is the wisdom of cutting through delusion, the delusion that Abhijit was just talking about. But there's the stepping out of the Zendo and into the fresh air of the whole world and everyone in it. And practicing there. Shining practice, shining wisdom, is referring to prajna, to light, to the light, dharma. The truth. So that we don't have to make a shine, our practice itself shines. And so we can live as simply as we possibly can with any kind of niche that we find for ourselves, for our own satisfaction and happiness and joy. But it's all practice. And that's the point, really. We come to the monastery not to become holy people, but to find a way to step out of it into the world. Samantabhadra rides on an elephant, and I always think it takes an elephant to get into the world and not feel crushed by it. It takes some kind of big, extremely intelligent and wise creature to carry us. You don't see images of Samantabhadra very often. Blanche has a couple of them at Zen Center, but she's the only one I know who has an image of Samantabhadra. I drew one once. That was really interesting. We could all do that. Just create your own Samantabhadra. Well, it's 8 o'clock.